Good to be with all of you, and I want us to go ahead and get right into the material. And we're going to be talking to young people tonight, and we'll get to those 3 points on the board first in a minute. But first, let's talk about your role in the family, and that's pretty easy to do. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. We're going to look at two texts from Proverbs and from Ephesians. The first one is in Ephesians chapter 6. So we're going to talk right now about your role within the home where you're growing up. But then what I want to turn to is look and have you think about your role if you're going to choose to marry and bear children in your family then. Because I think it's huge to make plans ahead in this category. So first off, let's look at your role now. Ephesians chapter 5, after it talked about the husbands, after it talked about the wives, it says this: children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And then there's the fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So what were the two verbs there that you're told to do? You're told obey, and you're told to honor. Now those things go together, but sometimes people separate them. You can obey and not honor, and that's not good enough. If mom says, take out the trash, and you go, oh, why do I always have to take out the trash? You might have obeyed and took out the trash, but you absolutely did not honor. And so let's read again and see what it says there. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. So if you grow up and have kids of your own, you're going to realize what a big job your parents had raising you. It's a joyous work, but it is a lot of work. And that should be honored. And it's the right attitude to have. So do what they tell you to do, and do it respectfully. There's not enough respect in our society. There's not enough respect in homes. There's not enough respect for other people. Treating people respectfully is really important. And some of the reasons why it's so important to listen to your parents, let's go back over to the book of Proverbs. So one time I was talking with this young lady, she was about 13, and her mom was having trouble with her, and I sat down with the mom and with the 13-year-old. And as I was getting a sense of the situation, I asked the 13-year-old, I said, do you think your mom knows what it's like to be 13? And the teenager goes, no. This is really pretty funny when you think about it, because guess what every mom by default had to be? 13. You don't get to skip 10 to 15. You have to be 13. I said, she used to be 13. The problem here is not that that your mom doesn't understand what it's like to be 13. You don't understand what it's like to be the parent responsible for the 13-year-old. The mom knew both of those, the child knew part. Now, will there ever be times when you have a better idea than your parents? Yeah. And you know what you can do with that? You can lodge it away and you think, you know, if I grow up and have a family, I think I'll do that this way. And I'm really thrilled when my kids pass me. And sometimes some of them pass me at a surprisingly young age. But when they go past me, that's a good thing. And you know what? I'll be tickled if their kids pass them. But you need to listen to them, because lots of times they know things that you don't know. So look at Proverbs chapter 1, and in verse 8, hear, my son, your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. Drop down to chapter 2. My son, if you will receive my words, treasure my commandments within you. Make your ears attentive to wisdom. Incline your heart to understanding. If you cry out for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek for her as silver, search for her as hidden treasures. And again, there will be other things here. Look down to chapter 4, verse 10. Hear, my son, accept my sayings. The years of your life will be many. I have directed you in the ways of wisdom. He talks about, my father taught me. Now I'm teaching you. Your parents know things that you don't know. When you get of age, you will probably see a few things that you might be able to do better. Do that. But by and large, you don't realize what your parents know that you don't. Mark Twain once said, when I was 18, my father was a great fool. By the time I was 20, I was surprised how much my father had learned in 2 years. And of course, his point was not that his father learned anything. It's just that between 18 and 20, he started learning why, oh, that's why Dad said that. Oh, that's why Dad said that. Listen to the wisdom. Let's compare it to if you're a groundhog, okay? If you're a groundhog, you can learn lessons different ways. So we're going to imagine groundhogs have a groundhog safety manual. We have a bunch of groundhogs in Pennsylvania. They're not real fast and they get run over. So here's a family of groundhogs and you have the groundhog safety manual. And it says, you know, thou art a groundhog. Do not try to run across the road in front of a car or a truck. All right, so a wise groundhog is going to listen to mom. Don't do it. You're not a fast mammal. Don't do it. You're going to listen to dad, and you're going to listen to the manual, right? Well, there's other ways to learn. That's the best way to learn, to listen to the manual and to listen to your parents. Some people insist on finding out things their own way, and most of us have learned a few lessons, unfortunately, doing it the hard way. And so a groundhog tries to make it across the road, doesn't make it, gets, you know, run over and loses a limb. And, you know, then he can say, okay, really? You know, there's a reason why they say, don't do that. Then he's learned from that. Don't do that to yourself. Don't, you know, halfway destroy yourself to just learn something you could have learned easily. Then there's the ability to learn from other people. You walk out and you see dead groundhogs laying on the road. And you can say, yes, I see what's happened there. But the wise groundhog is going to listen to his parents and is going to listen to that manual. Proverbs is saying, listen to your mom and dad. Listen to the wisdom in the ways of light so that you will walk in the right ways and don't go to the left and to the right. So that's your job for right now. Be listening. Don't be resentful. Your parents aren't supposed to let you do everything you want. Your parents are supposed to train you. Listen, value that wisdom, and then build on that. Now I want to turn and talk about when you get ready to start your life. As we've said this morning, you don't need to marry. Jesus didn't marry. Paul did great things, and it helped him not to be married. But if you choose to be married, if you want to be married and you choose to be married and that happens, I want to talk to you about love. Look at Titus chapter 2. We mentioned this the other day. In Ephesians 5, it commanded husbands, love your wives. And in Titus 2, that shouldn't say 45, that should be Titus 2, probably verse 4 through 5. It says, the older women should train the younger women to love their husbands and to love their children. So what do we understand from that? If Ephesians 5 commands love, and Titus 2 says you can train someone to love, then love is more than just a warm feeling you get about somebody. So there's, I want to tell you a story. I'm going to give two analogies here. One is a true story. Another one is a hypothetical question. So let's say you meet a young man, and he's a friend of yours, and he's about to get married. And he says, oh, I'm in love. He says, I'm going to ask her to marry me. You say, so you really love her, right? Oh, yeah, I really, really love her. What do you love about her? What's he going to say? I love the way she looks. I love the way she talks. I love the way she laughs at my jokes. I love the way she flips her hair. I love the way she smiles. What are all of those things? I'm not saying there's not valuable things, but what are all those things? External things that he's getting. He loves that. So you really, really love her. Yes, yes, yes. I love her eyes. I love her skin. I love her hair. I just love her. I love her. Okay, let's see how much you love her. It's 3 weeks before the wedding, and she's in a terrible accident, and she's paralyzed, and she's burned. She can't walk like she walked. She may not be able to talk like she talked. Her complexion is not the same. Still love her? Now, if that were to happen, if that tragedy were to happen, I think the wise thing for both parties would be to pause and regroup and focus on getting better and not jump into something too quickly. But the fact is, it challenges that presumption. What did he say a week before? Oh, I really, 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 really love her. Do you still? And maybe he'll say, yes, I do, and maybe they're going to get married. But if he goes, well, I loved her when all those externals were there that I got. How much is that really love? And you know what? I told you about that couple in their 80s that were sitting in that picture and they were just in love. But if you don't learn how to love, and you will grow old with somebody, and if you haven't learned how to love, they're not going to look like they did when they were 20. And if all you loved was how they looked when they were 20, what happens in that relationship? So, Dr. Laura Schlesinger used to do a radio program, a lot of interesting stuff on there. And one time she had a letter from a woman, and I want to share that with you. And think about it both on who to choose to marry and this principle of learning to love. Dr. Laura Schlesinger read this letter, and there was a girl out on the West Coast, I think Oregon or Washington, and she married late in life. So other friends married earlier, and they thought she was very unromantic, because she wasn't going out to the bars and just hooking up and looking for somebody to fall in love with. And she had decided what she was looking for. And she made a list of the qualities that she was looking for. And at parties and stuff, she would have gone to. You're not going to necessarily meet those qualities. And so she didn't marry. She didn't marry. She didn't marry. Eventually, she was looking for somebody that fit her list. And her friends thought that was very unromantic. Eventually, she met a man that fit her list. And he had a list. And she fit his list. And they got married. And then something tragic happened. She got afflicted with a very difficult disease. And she lost control to a large extent of her muscles and her nerves. And she put out a huge amount of weight, and she could not even take care of herself anymore. And she couldn't even get in the shower and bathe. And she said, he would put a stool in there. He would help me in there. And he would bathe me. And he would compliment me. And she said, and he never complained. That's love. You remember in some of the vows, it's what? Do you take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife, to have and to hold, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, for richer or for poorer? Well, it didn't get better, it got worse. And it wasn't in health, it was sickness. And he was there. He was true to her. He was devoted to her. He cared about her feelings, and he never complained to her. There's a beautiful ending to the story. Eventually, she was able to recover and got past that disease, which is wonderful for her, and it's wonderful for him. But do you know what she found out without a doubt? She found out the love that he had for her. I know a couple where the husband has been terribly ill for a long time, and it's been on the wife for a long, 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 long time. But if it was reversed, I think he would be caring for her. That's what marriage is. You're in it for the long haul. It's not just what you get, which comes back to this on the board. Love is not primarily about what you get. Love has to include what you give. Remember, we said this verse the other day, John 3:16. You know this verse. God so loved the world that he gave. It's not God so loved that he got. God so loved that he gave. So instead of viewing love as a very superficial thing, what do I get? What do I get? What do I get? Start thinking about what you give. Have you ever noticed how kids, as they mature, it changes about gifts? A very small child, what do they want? What am I going to get? What am I going to get? As we grow up, we start being interested in what? I know what I'd like to give. I know what I'd like to give. Think about who you are going to marry. And marry somebody that wants to serve God. Marry somebody that's a Christian. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Paul's talking about here that there were things he had a right to do that he didn't. For instance, Paul was not married, but he had the right to be. He talks about in 1 Corinthians 7 the advantages that he found in being single. And it was obviously a great benefit in his work. But he said if he'd wanted to get married, he could have. But notice what it would have been. 1 Corinthians 9, he said in verse 5, do we not have a right to take along a believing wife, even as the rest of the apostles and the brothers of our Lord and Cephas? He wasn't going to do that. That wasn't the life that he was choosing for himself. But if he would have chosen a wife, who obviously would it have been? It would have been a Christian. If you marry somebody that is not a Christian, and if you're dating somebody and get your heart really involved with somebody that's not a Christian, let me tell you what very often happens. The heart gets way, way, way ahead of the head. And you start thinking, well, maybe this will be okay, maybe this will be okay, maybe this will be okay. If you've got two people and one of them wants to go to eternal life and the other doesn't, you're going opposite directions. And then you're going to bring children into that? And just gravity, if one of us is standing up here and one of us is standing down here, if Zachary comes up here and he's standing up there and I'm down here, and we're going to have a battle and see who can pull each other up or down. You know who's going to win? If I'm down here, I'm going to win. If I'm up there, Zachary's going to win. Because whoever's on the bottom has gravity working with them. It's much easier to pull somebody down than pull somebody up. Help bring people to Christ. But before you make a commitment, and dedicate yourself to a life with this person, ask yourself, where is that person going? Because if they're not planning on serving the Lord, what business do you have tying yourself to that person? And what is that going to do to your children? Because it's rough enough to bring up children and train them in the right way when you got both parents going the right way. But when you have one saying go this way and one going that way, it's really difficult. Pick somebody that you're going to love and they're going to love you. But above that, pick somebody that loves God. And I want to say one more thing about this and we'll go to the next slide. Here's why I pick somebody that loves God. Some people, I suspect, think, oh, I wouldn't want somebody that loves God more than me. I want to be number one. Listen, you're not always going to be number one. When you get married, there's going to be some times when your wife is pretty irritated with you. You know, no matter how much she loves you, there's going to be some times when you are not getting 5 stars, you know, and she's going to be annoyed with you. Same with the men and the women. If when you are annoyed or upset or frustrated with your spouse, if you don't want to serve God, you might not want to apologize. You might not want to accept that apology. You might get bitter and not want to fix that problem. But you know what you do when you both love God? As mad as you might be at her right now, or as mad as she might be at you right now, you both realize, you know what, this is not the way the Lord wants it. And so out of respect to God, both people come back and they apologize and make it right, and then they kiss and they make up and they're back in love and things are beautiful. It pays to do things God's way. I missed point number 2. Let's back up to it and then we'll do point number 3. We'll do point number 3 last. Lessons from Luke 15. Turn to Luke 15, please. Go a little bit more and then the lesson will be yours. Luke 15. This is, there's a parable about a lost sheep and a lost coin and a lost son. And it all stems from verse 1, where when tax collectors and sinners are coming to Jesus, Pharisees don't like it. And Jesus is saying, no, you should be glad when sinners are repenting. Number one, if you got 99 sheep and one's lost, you're glad to find it. If you got 9 coins and one's lost, you're glad when it's safe. And if you've got one son that's gone away, you're glad when he comes back. That's the parable. There's several facets of this, but the chief point is that God in mercy, there's joy in when a sinner repents. And we should have joy when a sinner repents and not be like the older brother who's like the Pharisees. You're eating with them. You're having a fatted calf with him. Don't be like that. But this is one of my favorite parables because it's also interesting just on the family dynamic side. And since we're talking about the family, that's what I want to look at for a minute. Luke chapter 15. Starting number 11. A man had 2 sons. The younger, we talked about that this morning, of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. So he divided his wealth between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on his journey to a distant country, and there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now, why did he go to a far country? Because he doesn't want to have anything to do with his father. He doesn't want his father telling him what to do. He doesn't want his father overlooking and seeing and criticizing or correcting him. He's had enough of that. He wants to do what he wants to do. And the easiest way to do that is get far away. Then he squanders everything. Now, this represents what we do in sin. Stop and think about this. I said he doesn't want anything to do with his father, but that's not quite true. There was one thing he wanted about his father. What was it? The money, the blessings. That's the way most people treat God. Everybody wants God's blessings. Even the people that don't believe in God want his blessings. Who made the sun? God. The air? God. The water? God. Nature? Animals? God. Everybody wants his stuff. But they don't want a relationship with him. They don't want his rules. They don't want his governance. They don't want him as king. So give me the stuff and then let me go do what I want to do. So he goes and wastes it. But when we take God's blessings and ignore God's will, what do we often end up doing to those blessings? We can turn them into cursings. And things don't go well, and things don't go well for this young man. So he spent it all, and he ends up being in want. Now, when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be impoverished. So to just kind of sum up what happens next, he ends up feeding pigs and wishing he had it as good as the pigs. So this is a bad state if you're a Jewish boy wishing you had it as good as the pigs do. And the text says, when nobody gave him anything, the next verses are, when he came to himself. Don't enable bad behavior. Parents, grandparents, lots of times there will be a foolish child or grandchild or great-grandchild that's making the same mistakes over and over, and they're making those mistakes in part because they know that mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or somebody's going to bail them out every time. That's enabling. Nobody gave anything to him, and he came to his senses, and he came back. Now, here's what I want you young people to think about for a moment. What was this young man's attitude about, I'm going to give you two words, blessings and privilege and responsibility. What was his attitude? He wanted all of the privilege and what? None of the responsibility. That is a common teenage attitude. And it's getting, I'm afraid, more common in this country. It's an entitled attitude. You're supposed to give this to me, I'm supposed to get what I want. And sometimes young people will say things like this. I'm blank years old. I ought to be able to fill in the blank. So maybe, I'm 13 years old. I ought to be able to have a smartphone. I'm 16 years old. I ought to be able to have my own car. I'm 15 years old. I ought to be able to stay up as late as I want. I'm in every one of those statements. What are they presuming? Because I've had this many birthdays, I should get privileges. What's wrong with that? Let me tell you something. Responsibility is more important than privilege. You know what would be a better attitude? What about this? I'm 16. I should be able to change the oil on the car. You know, if Dad's going to let me use it, I should be able to change the oil. I'm X number of years old. I should be able to do the dishes. I should be able to do the laundry. I'm X number of years old, maybe older. I should pitch in on the property tax, right? You know, if the child's older. You see the different mindset there? The immature mindset is thinking, when I get this many years old, I get to do whatever I want to do. I'm going to tell you kids a secret. Becoming an adult doesn't mean you get to do whatever you want to do. Hate to bust your bubble, but being adults, is adulthood means you can do whatever you want to do and you don't have any responsibilities? Exactly no. Yeah, there's lots of things you get to choose, but we have responsibilities. Responsibilities have to be met. So we need to help our children learn to appreciate responsibility. And guess what? The more we fulfill our responsibilities, guess what? The more privileges there are. But young people, get that in your mind. Fulfill responsibilities and then appreciate the privileges. Instead of demanding the privileges, what does this guy do? Give me the money that's coming to me. Give me the inheritance. Your dad's not dead. Your dad is not dead yet. I don't care. I want it. Give me the stuff. And then escape all the responsibility. Reverse that. Accept responsibility, and I'll tell you this, the more you as a young person accept responsibility, the more you will find adults and other people rewarding that responsibility with privilege. Lastly, I mentioned up there was on the thing, roads lead to places. The choices you make now are absolutely huge. I'm 61. It's still important what choices I make tomorrow. I could destroy my life tomorrow if I wanted to. But when you are a young person, there is so much potential to make good choices for your whole life and so much potential to make bad choices for your whole life. Proverbs over and over talks about which path you take, which don't go in the path of the wicked. Go in the path of righteousness. Choose which path and choose who's going to go down that path with you. That is so, so important. Years ago, I was talking to a young man. He was 15, and he'd gotten in trouble again. And I went over and talked to him. And so I tried to paint a picture of a few years down the road. I said, you're 15 now, 10 years from now. I said, what would you like your life to be like? I said, where would you like to live? And he said, I'd like to have a big house in the country. Okay. Would you like to be married? He said, yeah. I said, what would you like your wife to be like? He said, I'd like her to be, you know, beautiful and kind and respectful, honest. All good things. You want to have kids? What do you want your kids to be like? I want them to be respectful and obedient. Okay. What kind of job do you want to be? He wanted to be an insect scientist. Okay. but he wanted to have dogs and be able to have some guns and shoot and stuff. So, okay, that's all great. I said, there's a problem. You can't get there going the road that you're on. Because he was making really stupid decisions and getting in trouble with the law, and the choices he was making at age 15 don't go to a beautiful, intelligent, kind, honest woman saying, he's the guy for me. That doesn't go to saying, hey, let's hire this scientist. That doesn't, it doesn't get there. And I said, the road you're going on, if you don't learn to control yourself, the road you're going on is that society is going to control you and you're going to be locked up. His response was, that's what everybody tells me. Not long after that, he robbed the Big Lots. He duct taped the manager. He was using a little air gun, so it wasn't a real gun, but the man didn't know it and was frightened and had a heart attack. And the man fortunately didn't die, and he went away, of course, to jail and then spent years and years and years in prison. And when his 25th birthday came, I think he was, yeah, definitely still in prison. Roads go places. One of the greatest things about being young is that you get to choose very early on which road to go. Choose wisely. Choose really wisely. And if you choose to marry and are blessed with children, decide now what you want that to be like. All the things that we talked about this weekend about the home, decide what you want in your home and aim for that. Decide to marry a godly person. Decide to raise children to fear God and follow Him. Decide to, when you're wrong, you'll admit it to your wife, and when you're wrong, you'll admit it to your kids. Decide to humbly walk with God and help raise your children to do the same. And then aim for that. And don't let the world or some adulterous woman or flirt or somebody else get you off the path. Go on the right path. Thank you so much for your time this weekend.